This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Bonjour, Ryan. Comment ça va?
Oui, ça va. Is that right?
Well, yeah, it goes well, Ryan.
That's about all I know in French. Oh, man. This is an interview and an episode that I need, Greg, because our topic today is about brushing up on a foreign language that you may have learned in the past or studied in the past. And to help us explore this topic, we have an incredible expert with us. Her name is Carol Bosser. She is a speaker and entrepreneur. Carol is English, and she founded her own language training company called ILTC in France. As a Toastmaster leader since 2010, she trains others to give speeches, hone their presentation skills, and boost their self-confidence. She left her native Leicester, England, to study French for 1 year in Lyon, and over 30 years later, she's still there. She jumps easily from one language to another and has also worked as a conference interpreter. Carol loves running workshops and helping others to follow their dreams. And if your dream is to speak another language while you're in the right place, Carol will certainly help you. To help us explore how to brush up our foreign language skills, fellow Toastmasters and other listeners, please welcome Carol Bosser. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you so much. It's a good job that we're on a podcast, so you can't see me blushing. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Bienvenue, Carol.
Merci beaucoup. Merci. Thank you. That's very kind of you. I'm so happy to be with you guys this evening to talk about one of my favorite subjects.
Carol, we were actually supposed to talk to you a year ago.
Yes, your article, Carol, Brush Up Your French, How to Regain Fluency in Time for the 2020 Convention, came out in February of 2020. Of course, the 2020 convention did happen, but it was not in Paris. It was an online convention. I think, however, this is still a really relevant topic in this crazy year leading into a new year here of quarantine and COVID-19. Among the many pursuits that people have been undertaking, one has been to learn a foreign language or brush up on their foreign language skills. Is that something you've been seeing as well, Carol, a renewed interest in foreign language?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, first of all, yes, we were supposed to all be going to Paris for the International Convention in the summer of 2020, but so many things didn't exactly go to plan last year, did they?
Mm, no.
So that meant that we were all of us in this crazy, unknown situation. We had to learn how to adapt to online Toastmaster meetings. And for people who were not used to using online technology, that was a pretty steep learning curve. It was something that really stretched and continues to stretch our brains. And on the other hand, you know, a lot of people were searching for ways to occupy their minds, occupy their bodies. They were no longer traveling to work. I know for me, I had a whole lot more time on my hands, and I still have a lot more time on my hands because I'm no longer hurtling across France to see my clients as I was last year. So one of the ways that people have found to fill their time is an intellectual activity, and one of those intellectual activities is or can be learning a foreign language.
Carol, to quote Simon Sinek, let's start with why. If you're familiar with the book of that title and the TED Talk.
Of course.
With all of the things we could be putting our time or energy into learning, why do you think learning or improving a foreign language is something that's especially valuable now?
There are a couple of reasons. The first reason is that people had a dream, a vision of traveling to a foreign country how nice it would be to be able to order food in a restaurant, to be able to buy a cup of coffee in a bar, and to be able to talk to people in the foreign country that you're visiting. So now, well, that dream perhaps will have to be put on the shelf for some time. But there is another very important reason. And it's something that you said when we were chatting before the show, that you'd done a couple of years of school French and then you shifted to Spanish. How many people are in that situation? They did a couple of years French, Spanish, German, or English here in France at school, and not very much actually stuck in their minds. So that means that so many adults today have this negative experience. They've done something at school, but they're not feeling very comfortable with what they've done. They concentrate more on what they don't know in the foreign language they studied than what they do know. And they don't feel good about that. So for some people, this has been an excellent time to remedy that rather uncomfortable situation. The two main reasons people have is one positive reason going towards this vision of communicating in the language. And the other reason is a bit more negative. It's getting away from a rather uncomfortable situation or the feeling that they just wasted a couple of years at school.
Yeah, I'm thinking of myself. I know that I grew up in Montreal. My first language was English. My second language was French. I knew that I needed to improve it. And of course, I learned as much as I could. Of course, now that I moved away, I'm not using it as much. And I think like many others, we have this intention to say, you know what, we're going to learn this. We're going to sit down. We're going to see if we can read a newspaper. We can see if we can watch the TV shows. We're going to do it. But sometimes, as you were saying, did we waste our time back then? Sometimes we get stuck in our own heads. We say to ourselves, oh, you know, I'm too old to learn a language. Or I have an experience with a club. I interviewed one young lady who is in a Spanish bilingual club in the U.S. And she had indicated that although Spanish was her first language, she was apprehensive about trying to do public speaking in Spanish because her peers were kind of looking at her funny. And so she says, even though my first language is Spanish, I speak better in public in English than I do. Is that valid? What are some of the roadblocks that you're seeing that people have?
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good point that you've just brought up. You know, when you're talking about these negative emotions, the discomfort and feeling kind of silly when you try and speak in a foreign language, it's very similar to the discomfort that a lot of us have experienced when we first stood up to give a speech in public. This apprehension, the feeling everybody's looking at me, you know, everybody's judging me. Well, yeah, because that's what happened. People do look at us, people do judge us, but in the majority of social situations where we're feeling more confident, that doesn't really matter. When you're just learning how to speak in public, it is a problem for you, this feeling of looking silly and being judged. And it's exactly the same in a foreign language. You're concentrating on people looking at you and feeling silly, and that's not a very fruitful way to progress.
Yeah, sometimes you try to speak that second language, but the other person knows your first language, so they just revert back. And of course, and then you go, well, I'm not going to continue any further because this is ridiculous. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
Carol, in your article, you state that one of the most important activities we can do, or in fact, the most important activity we can do to become proficient in another language is reading. And I've found that a bit counterintuitive. I would think conversing with native speakers so that we're both exercising our pronunciation, but also hearing correct pronunciations. So I'm really curious to know, what is it about reading that's so powerful as a language acquisition path?
It is counterintuitive, isn't it? You think in order to get better at speaking a language, well, duh, I need to speak it. But very often speaking it, all you're doing is repeating the same old errors, and it's not particularly a good way or the best way to progress. the thing is, the majority of us, when we were first exposed to the foreign language, unfortunately, we were led to believe that the way to learn a foreign language was to look at the grammar. All through my long experience of teaching a language, you know, I have finally come to understand that really that is not a great way to learn a language. It's a great way to be bored. It's a great way to hesitate before you say anything. It's a great way to censor yourself, because it's as if you've got this internal monitor in your head saying, you know, do I have to add an S? Or is it der, den, des, dem? Or is it le? Or is it la? Or what is it? You know, you've got a grammar teacher in your head who's trying to tell you to shut up. And as adults, you know, the grammar teacher voice gets louder and louder. I'm a great fan of reading. When you want to progress in a language, there are a certain number of things that you need to do. Just as when you wish to progress in public speaking, you have to practice regularly. You have to think about those speeches. You have to go and see your mentor regularly. You have to think about the feedback you get and integrate that into what you're going to say. So it's a regular process. And this regularity, this consistency is so important when you're studying a foreign language, when you're acquiring a foreign language. I don't like to use the word studying, because when you say you're studying a language, it's as if you're an eternal student. But we're adults, so let's say acquiring a language, because you're able to be a language user much more quickly than you would imagine. I'm saying consistency, regularity of the activities. And the best activity, this is rather a long answer, isn't it, Nora, to your reading question? But I want to put it in context, because it seems so strange that to learn to speak, I'm recommending that you read. But the thing is, regular reading of comprehensible, compelling input is the best way for you to absorb grammatical structures and vocabulary in a natural and painless way. If you were lucky enough when you were a child to have your parents read to you regularly, I'm sure you remember a lot of those stories. The emotional impact of those stories, you know, hit you hard, and hopefully in a good way. It means that if I say to you, you're in Canada, and as an English woman, if I say to you, so I'll huff and I'll puff, hopefully you'll say to me, and I'll blow your
house down.
Because we all know that without any effort of memorizing the phrase, because emotionally it hit us hard. So when you're reading material that interests you on a subject that you're fascinated in, which is just a little bit difficult for you, you know, you're not going to read books for five-year-olds as an adult, but maybe, you know, you can read books which are simplified readers. And when you read them regularly, it's like a painless grammar and vocabulary lesson. And by the way, I've got the statistics to prove this, huh? It's not just my impression. There are a lot of teachers of linguistics who have carried out tests to measure the effectiveness of regular reading. And believe me, it works.
It seems to me, when you were talking about this and you talked about the emotional connection, and all of a sudden I had this flashback to my youth. You really hit it on the head when you said that when you're trying to learn a language, all of a sudden you're now conjugating the verbs in your head, and you're starting to look at all the different pronouns to try to figure out what fits with what. And it helps me understand why you're saying read but don't study, because if you're trying to study, it goes back to your grade school and your grammar school and how you were learning back then.
Let me tell you, the only people who enjoy studying grammar are language teachers. So unless you want to be a language teacher, which is not necessarily a profession that I recommend, but if that's what you want to do, study the grammar. But otherwise, learning grammar functions on a false hypothesis, a terrible hypothesis, because what you're doing is you're saying, I'm going to give you some delayed gratification. Ah, that's awful. Learn these structures, practice the structures, and the day that the structures become automatic, that's the day that you get to have fun and use the language. Well, that's awful. Who wants to wait that long?
I have to say, my degree is in English, but when I open up a Spanish textbook and start seeing terms like past imperfect and subjunctive, I'm like, my eyes glaze over. I'm like, I don't even know what these things are in English. I just don't remember.
Why would you?
The teachers say it's imperative that you learn that.
There you go.
Another one.
But I keep thinking of this phrase throughout this whole conversation, Carol, about things being caught, not taught. I think that's part of what you're saying. Even as kids, yes, we have some formal education in school, but our basic acquisition of language as children growing up into adulthood is we learn it by hearing it and by trying, absorbing it. And I think even with the reading, that's maybe what you're pointing to. You're experiencing how the language is used, as opposed to obsessing over all these details and rules.
Obsessing is the word. And I think there are far more interesting things in life to be obsessed about rather than the imperfect subjunctive. Right. We've been led to believe that if we study the grammatical rules long enough, then one day we will be able to apply them. But that doesn't happen. That's when people start casting around for reasons, for a blame frame. And that's when they start saying, well, it must be because I don't have a musical ear, or it must be because French people are no good at languages. And they say that here in France. Huh? You know, they say French people as a race, as a people, whatever that means, are not gifted in languages.
Like a genetic defect.
It's a genetic defect. Everybody knows that the French people have different genes to anyone else. Or you blame your first language teacher. Or we all cast around for a lot of reasons to explain why things didn't go to plan. And it's the same with so many things. It's like, you know, how come I read the diet book? I cut out carbs. So how come I'm not losing weight? Well, in that case, I think I better go and have a big tub of ice cream. The thing is, whether it's following a diet, whether it's learning how to do a new job, learning how to speak in public, it's normal that things don't go to plan. But that doesn't mean you have to quit.
Super. So we don't have to quit. What if we haven't quite started? What's a good way that we can start if we have not revisited a language we once learned for several years, or if there's a language that intrigues us that's new to us that we want to start to begin to acquire?
Well, I think a lot of people who are listening to this podcast will already have understood that we are in an amazing situation at the moment. Okay, we didn't get to Paris in the summer of 2020, but now we all have tickets to go and visit any Toastmasters club around the world. And so if you're thinking of revisiting a language, start with a club in a country that speaks that language. Start with a bilingual club. You know, if you're not quite sure of yourself, there are so many bilingual clubs in countries around the world. And that's a very gentle and fun way for you to find yourselves in an environment which, first of all, you know is going to welcome you with open arms, be so friendly like all Toastmaster clubs. And secondly, of course, you're going to understand what's going on because you know the protocol of a Toastmaster meeting. This is such a win-win thing. One of the clubs that I belong to had a fabulous joint meeting with a club in Mexico. And it was half in Spanish and half in English, and hardly anybody spoke Spanish, and it didn't matter. We had a great time. We're in a privileged situation. Visiting other Toastmaster clubs is not only going to help people with the language, it's going to help us get to know each other better, strengthen personal relationships, and make our meetings better because we're going to learn best practices from each other.
a few years back, I had belonged to a local meetup based on learning and improving Spanish. And it was a mix of native speakers as well as non-native speakers. I used to drive at least 45 minutes each way. And unfortunately, over time, the person who was leading the meetup was no longer able, and it just kind of disappeared. I think around that time, Greg was in a bilingual English and Spanish club. And I was kind of jealous of that. I thought, gosh, I wish there was something like that here. And it honestly never occurred to me until right now that, well, of course there are bilingual English-Spanish clubs that I could find and attend. It seems so obvious on one hand, but I completely missed it until this conversation today. So thank you for bringing that possibility forward.
Go for it, Ryan. There are loads of bilingual clubs around the world.
And you don't have to worry about it being in your own hometown. In our particular case, we started a English-Spanish bilingual club. We also have a French bilingual club called Club Bilingue. But now you could go right to the source. You can go right to Spain. You can go right to Mexico or to any of the other Spanish-speaking countries and learn.
Yeah.
And in French, they have a saying, when you love something, you pay the price. Last night, I was at a meeting where our president, Richard Peck, was present. And there were so many people who were happy to meet him that we had people from India, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning their time. So no excuses about time or your car doesn't work or anything.
Right.
Carol, I need to ask you this question because you mentioned about how sometimes things translate. And I know quite often when we're speaking or even when we're writing, we use similes, metaphors, idioms, right, to try to make the language more colorful or explain using these types of rhetorical devices. Now, I know that they don't always translate. So, for example, and I remember being called out on this, is of course we have the expression in English, it's raining cats and dogs when it's raining really hard. In France, I understand they use il pleut des cordes.
Des cordes, yes. Mm-hmm.
It rains string. And in mm-hmm. Quebec, when I grew up, it rains nails. Because I remember the first time I had said il pleut des chats et des chiens, meaning it rains cats and dogs. People are just looking at me with this empty
what
stare.
What are you talking about?
How do you deal with those types of things when you're trying to stitch together words to make coherent sentences when you're speaking a language that you're just learning?
Once again, I think we've got a great advantage. And I'm sure you guys remember with great affection the manual, the competent communicator. The project, you know, where we're encouraged to use beautiful expressions, picturesque language. What did we do? Maybe we sat down and we wrote a list of expressions that we liked. I know a guy in Barcelona who has taught us all the meaning of expressions like metaphor, tautology, and all a whole load of other Latin words. You know, expressions that you use when you're studying oration. We sat down and we studied. And when you discover in French, they say it rains string, don't you think that's beautiful? Doesn't that expand your mind? So that means that in your notebook, you've got a notebook for expressions in English and one for expressions in French and another one for whatever language you want. You're stretching your mind, you're learning. And maybe one day you will say, look, it's raining so hard. It's as if coils of rope were falling from the sky. And people will say, wow, you know, where did that come from? And you say, well, it was inspired by French string.
That's brilliant. Wow. So instead of worrying about being wrong in the translations, you could take the other forms of translations and almost create your own. I think that is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Carol, obviously, this is an inexhaustible topic. There are innumerable languages and so many things we can do. As we begin to wind down, I wonder if maybe you could give us a few quick bullets on what are some of the other things that we can do, not just as Toastmasters, but as human beings to increase our language proficiency.
I'd love to. I think it boils down to a three-part strategy. First thing I recommend you do is to figure out where you are now and take responsibility for it. Say, okay, I can't remember anything from school, but that was 100 years ago, and now I'm an adult, so it doesn't really matter. The second thing is to figure out where you want to go. And that means, just as we say in Toastmasters, it means defining a clear objective. What do you want to be able to do? Do you want to be able to give a speech in the foreign language? Do you want to be able to read a book? Do you want to be able to watch a program on Netflix? Because there are different activities. So fix a clear objective, an objective which gets your juices going, something which excites you. Don't aim for something which is boring, you know, like learning 100 grammar rules. And the third thing is plan your strategy with your deadline for the day, the date you want to be able to say, yeah, this is the day I'm going to give my speech. This is the day I celebrate the success of my objective. The strategy that I've just outlined is not specific to learning a language. It's the same for any project. You know, start from where you are, think about where you want to go, and fix up a strategy. But if you go about it in an organized project mindset way, and if you put to one side all the silly things, all the ideas you have about not being gifted or not remembering or feeling stupid, then that three-part strategy is going to be successful. And remember that you have such an advantage because you are already a word master.
Super. And for those who want to take on that three-part strategy, Carol has many more tips and ideas in the February 2020 issue of the Toastmaster, Brush Up Your French, How to Regain Fluency in Time for the 2020 Convention. And of course, if it's not obvious by now, the article addresses much more than simply French. It applies to the acquisition of any language. So Carol, as we round off here, is there anything else you want to share with our listeners about learning languages, the value of it, how to do it, anything at all that you want to leave with the listeners?
Sure. I'd like to invite you all to my Toastmaster Club, Lyon, Toastmasters Unlimited. We're on the Toastmaster International site. We meet every other Thursday, and we meet at 7 p.m. Central European time. It's a bilingual club, French and English. We have a barrel of fun, and we'd be delighted to see you.
Folks, you can use timeanddate.com to figure out exactly when that is your local time. Carol, if perhaps people want to connect with you to find out a little bit more about what you do and perhaps how you can help them or their club or their organization, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
I would be delighted if people contacted me. I have a website, which is carolbausor.fr.
Excellent. Carol Blosser, it was an absolute pleasure. Merci beaucoup and bonne journée. Have a good day.
Merci, messieurs. Bonne soirée.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you. That was great.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.